Each year, for the past 3 years, as many, if not most of you know, we've sent a very large delegation of members of the synagogue to the APAC conference, American-Israel Public Affairs Committee conference in Washington. And each year, in one way or another, coming back, I've reported from the conference, and this year is no different. I will perhaps speak a little bit more about certain aspects of it over Pesach, but for now, I want to tell you two good things, two bad things, two uncertain things, and finish with two things to remember. Eight, exactly. Mrs. Barlava has done the math. Altogether, you're going to get eight things, and afterwards, there will be a quiz. No. The first good thing is that almost 8,000 people, Jewish and non-Jewish, gathered in Washington. And you know, for every person who comes, there are many, many people who would have come, who might have come, who couldn't make it, who couldn't afford it, who couldn't get away. And so you have to multiply that by many because it's not an easy thing, and it's a major commitment and a major effort. And to walk into a ballroom and see there almost 8,000 people, all of whom are there to support Israel, is quite remarkable. And when I said Jewish and non-Jewish, that was not offhanded or thoughtless. Because right before the ball, right before the major dinner in the ballroom, at the cocktail party reception beforehand, I happened to run into somebody and we got to talking. He's a minister, very supportive of Israel, brings missions to Israel with thousands of people each year. And he introduced me to a friend of his, another Christian, a very religious Christian and a very learned one. We were talking about certain Christian theologians, and I asked him, what do you do? And he said, well, currently, I'm busy with a project in the Ukraine, trying to persuade the Ukrainian parliament to put up a new memorial to the Jews who died at Babi Yar. Now, if you're not familiar with the tragedy of Babi Yar, over 33,000 Jews were killed there in one action. And the Soviet government for years would only put up memorials that didn't mention the fact that the people who died there were Jews. Now it looks like there will be a memorial that will specifically mentioned the tragedies of our people, and who is spearheading this effort but an evangelical Christian. So when I say that to be there with thousands of people, Jewish and non-Jewish, who support Israel, it might be more accurate to say thousands of people, Jewish and non-Jewish, who support Israel and the Jewish people. And for that alone, for that moment alone, for that conversation alone, it was worth everything that it took to bring us there. But then you go downstairs, and you stand there while they do the roll call. And the roll call is of every senator and congressman and public official who is sitting in the room. And at a certain point, you just get dizzy because you sit there for minute after minute after minute while all these names are called. The largest gathering, we are told, outside of the annual congressional dinner, the largest gathering of public officials in Washington at the APAC conference once a year. Just a few less than a joint session of Congress. And you never know not only who's going to be there, but who you'll meet. I sit down at my table, and a lovely woman sits down next to me, and we start to talking. She has a son in Los Angeles. Just finished a novel. She has a son in New York who's in the music business. She comes from Chicago. Finally, I said to her, so what do you do? She says, oh, well, I'm the chief of staff for Michelle Obama. Which, by the way, just as a little bit of an aside, she was looking for a card, she couldn't find her card, so I took out my ubiquitous BlackBerry, which I carry with me except on Shabbat, and I said, well, you can just enter the information here. So she puts in her number, her address, and this and that, and then her position, which is COS, Chief of Staff, to FLOTUS, FLOTUS, First Lady of the United States, which I think is a great title. She's the cause of FLOTUS, right? Just imagine, you can tell your children one day, you too, maybe grow up to be the cause of FLOTUS. She also happens to be the Jewish liaison. And we had a wonderful conversation, and it reminded me anew of the remarkable reach of AIPAC and of the Jewish people. Just incredible. And it would be great, and is great, except, of course, we are Jews, and therefore, the happy side is only half of the story. So let me tell you two bad things. The one bad thing you know is that tensions between the American government and the Israeli government are more severe than at almost any time in memory. And not only are they more severe, but the stories that each tell, to go back to what Rabbi Guzik said earlier, are so different that you're shocked by the absolute opposition of perspective, even apart from conclusion. You've all read the editorials. I'm not going to rehash the differences in perspective, but they are pretty radical, and at the moment, there does not seem to be that much meeting of the minds between America and Israel. The Americans feel insulted, the Israelis feel deeply misunderstood and even disregarded, and the only thing that I will say about it is that we have to be very careful about what we say now and how we say it. Because we have a powerful stake in both sides. And both sides, feel their position very deeply. So listen, learn, speak moderately, and appreciate the fact that the people on each side who say what they say believe it, and I think, rightly or wrongly, believe that their position is ultimately in Israel's best interest. But still, that's a bad thing. And the reason that it's a bad thing is not because Israel and America are having a fight, allies fight, that's what happens. The reason that it's really a bad thing is that it's now been 3 years that you could go to the AIPAC conference and almost nothing about Iran getting a nuclear bomb has changed. That's why it's such a bad thing. Because really, that's what everybody should be focusing all their attention on. And yet, I have to tell you that the analysis, the conclusions, the worries, you could almost lift a speech from 1 year and put it in the previous year or the year before that, which is terrifying. Because the only thing that has changed, and you will hear a little bit more about this perhaps from Congressman Brad Sherman next Shabbat when he comes to speak at the Men's Club Shabbat. The only thing that has changed is more and more people are talking about containment. And let me tell you what the word containment means. It means they will get a bomb and then we will try to ensure that they don't use the bomb. And that is terrifying. Because there are lots of ways of using a bomb without using a bomb. The Soviet Union became the other most powerful country in the world by having bombs that they never used. But once you have that kind of weapon, the power that it gives you in the world, even if you don't use it, in the hands of that government, is at the very least destabilizing, and as you know, possibly much worse. So on the one hand, it was wonderful to see everyone there. On the other hand, you felt as though, is there nothing to be done? And by the way, this is not a new problem. The Bush administration couldn't figure out what to do, and now the Obama administration doesn't seem to be able to figure out what to do. This is not a problem of left or right. But it is a problem primarily for Israel, but not only for Israel. And I'll return to that in just a minute when I come to the two things we have to remember. So those are the two good and the two bad. Now two uncertain things. The first is, one of the things that you discover is uncertain is that you never know how the position of a certain government will in the end affect what happens in the Middle East. What I mean by that is, sometimes people liking us is good. Sometimes good things come from people who don't like us so much. One of the best presidents for Israel ever was President Nixon. He was not, in the end, really such a big fan of Jews. Carter brokered the peace between Israel and Egypt. I don't think anybody thinks that Carter likes Israel. Carter doesn't think that Carter likes Israel. And so, even though I heard a tremendous amount of speculation about what President Obama believes or doesn't believe, what he likes or doesn't like, we have to understand that in the very complex machinery of international diplomacy, the way things come out is not always equivalent to the way they go in. Surely President Bush loved Israel. Were his policies in the end helpful to Israel? Most Israelis don't think so. Remember that Israel argued against the war in Iraq. They thought it would be bad for Israel. So it's very complicated, and all I want to say is not that you should abandon your position or not that you shouldn't argue against policies you think are wrong, but realize that nothing is a straight line. That the fact that an official loves Israel doesn't mean what they do is going to be in Israel's interest. The fact that they are cool on Israel doesn't necessarily mean what they're going to do won't be in Israel's interest. When I say an uncertain thing, sometimes when you read editorials, it seems as though the person knows the world so well that what they say is going to be true. But you know that they've done studies on what pundits say on Sunday morning. If you're like me, you love to listen to people pontificate on Sunday morning about what's going to happen. They're almost never right. The number of times that someone says, Congress will do this, or this country will do that, and they turn out to be right is infinitesimal, like 10%, 15%. Because the world is a very complex place, and lots of factors enter into it that you can't anticipate. And I say this to guard both against despair and also against euphoria. If an administration takes a position you like, it doesn't mean it's going to turn out to be good. If they take a position you detest, it doesn't mean it's going to turn out to be bad. You can't know until it's over. I don't know whether that gives you comfort or worry, but it is an uncertain thing, and we should be aware of it. The second uncertain thing, and this we can do something about, is the most worrisome thing in some ways, which is that Stephen M. Cohen, who is a Jewish sociologist, recently did a study of non-Orthodox Jews under the age of 35. Non-Orthodox Jews under the age of 35, only a little bit more than half are, and I quote, comfortable with the idea of a Jewish state, compared to over 80% of Jews 65 and older. One of the most encouraging things about AIPAC is seeing all the young people who are there. One of the most discouraging things is knowing how many young people we're losing. We have a major task of PR, public relations, not only to do with the world, but to do with Jews. Remember that younger Jews don't remember a world in which there was no Israel. Don't understand what it meant to be a Jew in a place where Jews weren't secure. Don't have those memories of Israel as a founding state that the world looked on with admiration and with love. What they remember is the picture of the Israeli soldier in last week's newspaper that is on the front page, because, of course, if an Israeli soldier does anything that could look bad, the place to put it is on the front page. That's what they remember. And unless we educate our own, which is exactly, by the way, why we established the Sinai Temple Israel Center, why we have this new fellowship for high schoolers, why we seek with Israel Advocacy Day and other educational activities to bring more and more younger people into an awareness of what Israel is and what Israel means. Unless we do that, then in 30 years, there won't be this large pro-Israel community in America anymore. Because we are at the core of it. And that's our task. And it's not a bad thing, it's an uncertain thing, because we have the resources and we have the arguments and we are right about this. We just need to be able to reach those Jews who are on college campuses, which is, as you know, a hotbed of hatred of Israel. We need to be able to reach out to our own children and grandchildren and to tell our story, so that they won't be lost. We need to repeat again and again how crucial it is for America to have an Israel in the Middle East. Politically, technologically, militarily, culturally, all the ways that America and Israel reinforce each other. And that brings me to the two things we have to remember. Here's the lesson that everyone should take from the Iranian bomb. A phrase that I hope never comes to fruition and always remains as something that the world managed to avoid. Again and again and again in history, the enemies of Israel are the enemies of Western culture, of America, of freedom, of decency. And that's the real lesson of the threat from Iran, is Iran doesn't just threaten Israel. If Iran just threatened Israel, there's no way that even Russia now would start to recognize, slowly, slowly, the reality of that threat. But that which threatens Israel inevitably spreads beyond it, inevitably, inevitably. It is worth remembering, as Elliot Abrams said in an editorial today that I urge you to read, you can get it online, that Al-Qaeda started off to dispossess the government in Riyadh, not the government in Jerusalem. Sooner or later, evil sweeps across the Jews. Sometimes it starts by targeting us, but sooner or later, it reaches us. And we have to remember that threats on the Jewish people and on Israel never end with the Jewish people. That's the first thing to remember. But the second thing to remember is we really aren't alone. And we shouldn't feel alone. That there are many, many people here and across the world who understand what you understand, what I understand, what all the people at the AIPAC conference understood, which is that Israel is a flawed, sometimes cruel, sometimes foolish, sometimes arrogant, sometimes infuriating place. But they're right. And they are a small, embattled beacon of freedom in a place where people are not just sometimes cruel and infuriating and baffling and arrogant, but are often wicked and destructive and even evil. And we're not the only ones who understand that. So, in the end, you return from a place like APAC with very contradictory feelings. The threat has become more acute, but so has the reality that there are many, many people across the world of goodwill and good sense, and that the Jewish people doesn't stand alone. And after all, there is still something remarkable and historically astonishing about the Prime Minister of a state of Israel coming to the United States and addressing a crowd filled with supporters of Israel and senators and congressmen and even the Costa Flotus. It's just, if you have any sense of Jewish history, if you know where we've been and what we've seen, just to experience that lets you know that the miracles in the Passover story are small things compared to the miracles that we have witnessed in our own time. So in the end, as we stood with 8,000 people and applauded and worried and learned and listened, it really did feel like a tremendous tidal wave of joy and of confidence in the future. I want to close with something that Senator Schumer said, which was quite remarkable, and it sounded like something he's probably said many times, but I'd never heard him say it. And I have to say, when I listened, it in some way summarized the whole experience. He said, "Let me tell you about my last name." In Eastern Europe, Schumer was Yiddishized into Schoimer. And a Schoimer means a guardian, just like the name of our daughter, Samara, which means guarded by God, Shomer, Shomer Yah. He said, "That's because my ancestors were the guardians of the gates of the shtetls in Eastern Europe. And now I'm in the United States Senate, and I feel it's my responsibility to be a guardian in the United States Senate of the Jewish people and the state of Israel." And I thought, boy, that's a historical transformation that no one could have dreamed. No one could have dreamed that the descendant of the Schoimer in the little shtetl of Eastern Europe would stand up and announce his name and its history as a United States Senator in Washington. So I would say the APAC message to the Jewish people is we have done well. We have done remarkable things. And we have to do better. Because for all we have done, the world is still full with threats, with people who have evil in their hearts, who have bad designs on those who would live in freedom. But as we know from the Pesach story, Machil b'gnut u'misayim b'shevach. We begin in darkness and we end in light. Shabbat shalom.